everybody. This is your co-host, Stu, and I am here with the paranormalist, Patty Wilson. Hi, Patty. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
So we got some new folks that have joined us, and I wanted to say thank you and welcome to all of them. And unless you don't think we remember, we do know that there are some very faithful watchers out there and listeners who are listening and watching every single episode, and we really want to humbly thank you all. Please let know that it really matters what you guys think, and it matters to me if you ask a question that I answer it, and I'll go into that more in a minute. Go ahead.
Okay. And again, thanks for all the people that have joined and watched for us. So if you are watching this on any video platform whatsoever, and we're on quite a few of them now, please consider clicking the subscribe button down below. I'm using both fingers because I don't know which side it's going to show up on. And I'm the one who edits, so I should know. So please click the subscribe button, click the bell to be notified on YouTube when we release new content. We have 3 Facebook groups. The links for all of those will be down below. Email address, so you can send us your thoughts, feedback, ideas in an anonymous setting. We won't release that information unless you tell us to. And I think with that, I've said enough.
All right.
It's your turn.
All right. So a while ago, probably 2.5 months ago now, there was a gentleman, and I want him to know that I didn't forget, and I wasn't pushing off the question. It was a lot more complicated a question than he thought it was. So he asked, what would black magic look like in the modern world? And I went about it, at least an odd half dozen ways, trying to figure out how to answer that question. And all roads kept taking me back to this answer. So with my humble acknowledgement that it is not the only answer, but it is the one that I keep finding every time I take a foray into this world, I'll go ahead and start to answer the question. And it's going to be the entirety of this, whatever this ends up being, the entirety of our episode. So there are a couple things I want you to know before we start, that we have 3 parts to the human mind. The conscious mind, which is where our thoughts, our memories, our feelings, our environments, our, you know, remembering our sense of smells and stuff like that. So we remember cinnamon reminds us of grandma's house or, you know, a holiday party or something. That's all in our conscious mind. Then the subconscious mind that notices and remembers information when you're not really trying to do so. It influences your behavior in ways you don't even realize. And the memories are buried deep in your subconscious of things that maybe are triggered by a word or a sound. And the unconscious mind, which is a completely, well, they're both related, the unconscious and the subconscious, but they kind of work in tandem. It refers to the part of the psyche that contains repressed ideas and images, primitive thoughts, desires. And we're going to need that information as we walk through this journey, because part of the answer to the how black magic will present itself in the modern world is going to involve that particular issue. So let's start. Apologize. I did not have a chance to lift my notes and put them in a smaller order, so we're going to have to page through just slightly, and I do apologize for that. So magic from the very beginning of time, if you go back to the beginning of magic came from, according to historian lore, 2 sources. One were the Watchers, who were the angels who fell, who brought arcane knowledge and secret knowledge to humankind in trade for the ability to marry the women and to partake in ownership of the earth by virtue of being their spouse, being connected as part of one. And so their trade-off was they would teach the fathers of these girls arcane magic. That's one of the ways that magic was originally discovered. The other common source is Solomon, King Solomon. So King Solomon, and we know about him, really, most of us, is the story about the baby. So, you know, where the 2 ladies had their babies and sleeping with them, one rolled over and smothered her child, the other didn't. They both wake up, then one discovers her baby is dead, the other, you know, and she grabs the other woman's child and says, "This is mine." And they fight, and eventually they get arrested and taken in front of King Solomon, who has to decide the case. Solomon says, you know, when both of them are arguing it's their child, we'll just cut the baby in half and give them each half. one woman's like, fine, that's fine with me. The other's like, no, my goodness, no, just let her have the baby. Just don't hurt the baby. And he's like, okay, that's the mom. A wise, you know, way to just determine it. But what people don't know is, according to lore, King Solomon, as he grew older, he violated the rules of God. First of all, he married women who were not Jews. He was not supposed to marry outside of his race because of his bloodline being so prominent. And then there is a story that he was approached by an angel named Uriel, and he was an archangel, and he was given a ring. And this ring controlled demons. And he bound these demons and had them build the tabernacle to God. But power corrupts. And when one can cast and bound, you know, demons and bind demons and things like that, there are these texts called the Books of Solomon. Now, if they were written by Solomon or not, I do not know. I don't think anybody knows for sure. But in these books, they chronicle supposedly his forays into witchcraft and all of this. So those are the two ways that magic came into our realm, to the best of our ability to tell. Both of them through angels and demons. Because Solomon supposedly learned the arcane arts that he knew, at first from Uriel, who was telling him how to bind the demons, and then from the demons, once they were bound, telling him, but you can also do this. Very reminiscent of the Bible story of Adam and Eve, where Satan came to her and said, oh yes, but you can still do this. And so his hubris, his human ego, got the best of him, according to the tale. And he began to participate in demonic rituals, if you will. So those are how it came into the world. And it has never changed in so many ways. It is still at the base level exactly that. And always will be, because it's the nature of what it is. You know, fire will always be a fire, whether you build it in 3 AD or you build it today. It will always be a fire. And it will still require the same things, oxygen, wood, and in accelerants of some sort, something to spark it. And it's the same with magic. Magic is the same way. However, today we have these wonderful lighters that will do it, and we don't have to just sit there chipping flint. And so there are ways that it modernizes. And that's what I ended up focusing on, is how did black magic become modernized so that it's different but yet the same. So here's what we had touched on it a little bit. We touched on the episode where we talked about demons coming through your computer to come to you,
right?
And it is the answer to all of it. So it is still here, still active, just like demonic entities are still here and active, and angels are still here and active. We've told stories of both throughout the podcast, demons that have interacted with human beings. We haven't really done a whole lot of exorcisms, but we will get to them. And also angelic visitations. So they're both still here, and they're both still at war, and they're both still trying to pull us in different directions. And that's important to know. So my answer to the question starts out with demons and witchcraft, which comes along with them. Because that's what you do with witchcraft, is you control elements and elementals and spirit beings and what have you, depending on how you define witchcraft, are still here and still involved. And they have been forever. And anytime there has been a massive leap in technology, from not being able to have print to the printing press to, I think you see it pick up mostly, you see a lot of it in modern times, when radio became a force, communication, because mass communication is a grand opportunity for evil to take off. You can now spread and disseminate in so many directions at the same time. Yep. Mm-hmm. Cell phones, all of that. But radios were that way. And for the longest time, we didn't realize that we were being entertained and bemused and what have you, by these devices. There's nothing wrong with being entertained. I'm not saying that. There's nothing wrong with suspending disbelief for a little while and just enjoying something because it's fun. Not saying that either. But they ride along with it. And they hide inside of all of that world so that it's hard for us as humans to discern the difference. And in order to illustrate that, I wanted to share some stories. And the one I'm going to focus the most heavily on is because, first of all, there's a ton of material. I'm not even going to give you 1/10 of the material that there is on this. And believe it or not, it's Disney Corporation. So there have been some books written. And one gentleman who actually wrote one of the books literally spent 2 years with the family's blessings in the Walt Disney archives sorting out all of this. And you will find Walt Disney portrayed as everything from a really, really, really amazing, sweet man, kind and gentle, which is the persona that they crafted for him as a businessman and as a television personality, to somebody who was the complete opposite of that. I would say that somewhere in the middle, maybe not always consciously, but in the middle, you're going to find the truth. So if you look at Walt Disney and as a human being, as a person, he was a Mason. He was a member of the Solomon Temples. He started secret societies. There's something called the 33 Club in Disneyland, which people have no clue what it is, because you really have to have $250,000 to even be allowed to walk through the door. And not many of us can. And it's modeled after a Masonic temple on the inside, the interior, with marble and all the grand fixtures. And whatever happens there, you're sworn to secrecy, and you can never talk about it, and nobody ever has. And the odds on, you know, if there's nothing nefarious going on, nobody ever saying, oh yeah, like he has all these cool bands come in there, and, you know, or something like that. It was sort of along the line. It reminds me very much of, what is that grove? There's a grove out west in the western part of the country where the elite meet every year in July. And, you know, they do all kinds of weird sacrifices and sexual rituals and what have you. And
beats me. Yeah.
I talked about it before.
Like, I didn't get the invitation, so I mean that's
yeah. No, and I'm like, it's amazing. I mean, these are people, the wealthiest and the most powerful people in the entire world. And they come together every July for like two and a half weeks. And we've talked about it before. But anyway, it's sort of like that. It's a secret society that's super protected. And then you look at his work. His work is filled with occult and demonic imagery. And so I wanted to kind of go down through some of that because it's important to understand what I'm talking about. And you should know that alongside of all of this, he worked with the FBI and the CIA. He participated in mind control programs. He spied on fellow actors and writers and cartoonists. And we know he participated in MK Ultra for a fact. Now, when I say I know for a fact, there was a cache of documents, both at the FBI and the CIA, that eventually were cut loose by Freedom of Information. They're redacted, but there are significant portions of them that are not redacted that you can read, where they flat out talk about him participating in MK Ultra, using his television shows and the little movies he was making at the time and what have you, to practice mind control on people and children. Now, how does this play into witchcraft? One of the things that we need to understand is that the social world, the physical world, and the spiritual world are all entwined. So if you're working in a world of demonics, they're going to come into this world and they're going to try to put themselves at a good light, a good advantage in every way they can. So they'll come at you through whatever medium they can reach you from. And how nice that you can stand in front of children and watch, you know, Mickey Mouse as a sorcerer's apprentice, you know, and making witchcraft fun and cool and what have you. So there are just so many ways that it came into his world. So I wanted to make you aware of the MK Ultra thing. Also, because the CIA, I don't know if people know this, along with the German Nazis, the CIA literally sought out arcane books of magic and attempted to do magic rituals to gain power. It is well documented that during the Nazi regime, there were many high-ranking officials that went around the world gathering the books of knowledge. They tried to also gather everything they could get, from the spear that stabbed Christ in the side to they were looking for every religious artifact they could get, and all satanic and witchcraft and ancient religions, and practicing and participating in these as they could find the materials to do so. And so did the CIA. So you have a group of people who are talking to a guy who's super patriotic, who's like, yeah, I'll do that if that's going to help, you know, end the Cold War. Not a problem. And putting all this stuff in there. Now, was he innocent of all this? I don't know that he was. He had an organization, you know, that really went out of its way, if you look at the things that went on. And, you know, they really painted things in a very odd light, and we've gotten so used to it we don't even notice it anymore. You know, I'm going to go through the cloak and dagger stuff and get into the fact that some of these Germans who actually had been looking for and participating in satanic rituals in Germany through Operation Paperclip came to the United States and participated with him and worked on Disney projects with him. And the more they were with him, the more things got dark in the world of Walt Disney. So you saw more and more surreal, evil, nasty things going on in the movies and things. And people are sitting there going, no, you didn't. No, you didn't. Well, you did. And this is all kind of worked together, because Walt Disney was meeting with amazing, strange bedfellows, truly. He was meeting with Benito Mussolini. He was meeting with the royal family. He was meeting with the Pope of Rome. He was meeting with Nazis. He was meeting with people in satanic cults all at the same time. And so it's a very odd set of circumstances. And as that period travels forward, we're going to start talking a little bit about some of the things that he participated in, or he at least approved, if you will. Now, if anybody would like to see the documents, I can certainly send you in the direction of the FBI and the CIA documents. They are public purview now. But I did go through them, and they were just absolutely insane, some of the documents that were there. So one of the precepts of the CIA's work with MKUltra, along with mind control, was to physically torture and sexually abuse their victims, the people that were their subjects, along with drugging them. There are some really scary, creepy things that they did. But one of the techniques that they used were they, and this has been testified to in court, in Congress, by survivors, is that, and I'm going to read this to you exactly, countless self-proclaimed victims of the horrific trauma-based mind control experiments attest to the use of the Disney films for their programming, especially the child victims. And also films like The Wizard of Oz and Alice in Wonderland were reportedly staples for mind control. And then it goes on to explain that these traumatized victims were forced to disassociate and accept programming instructions, using these movies as a kind of a place to get them to relax, and then they would start programming them with this stuff. There's actually there's paperwork to back it up. I've got the documents. From the MKUltra program, there is a thing called the Kubrick Interrogative Manual, and in the manual, he documents what's called the Alice in Wonderland method, and he talks about exactly how they go through this process to confuse. It's a confusion technique to confound the expectations and conditioned reactions of the interrogee. He is accustomed to a world that makes some sense, at least to him, a world of continuity and logic and predictable worlds. He clings to this world to reinforce his identity and his powers of resistance. And then he talks about how this obliterates the familiar. It replaces it with the weird, the strange, the unusual, the nonsensical. How they go through this whole process to change their mind using these movies. But if that was all of it, it would just be like, okay, that's just a horrible coincidence. The CIA did this terrible thing. Yeah, I get that. But it's not all of it. Disney himself painted the characters that he did very specifically. They're filled with subliminal messages. And for those of you who don't believe that subliminal messages have any place in the world, there are, tell that to the advertising agencies that spend a lot of time finding out what we respond to. And again, this is going to come back to witchcraft in a minute. I haven't forgotten my topic. So we know, there's actually a commercial that's on right now that's really kind of funny. It says, studies find that if a person sees people having a good time, they will, they'll remember it better. So we want you to drink our beer. So here's somebody swimming in a pool while listening to music, you know, they're going on with all these things. So remember our beer and buy our beer. Well, basically it's a kind of a funny tongue-in-cheek way of saying we can screw with your head and make you more compelled to spend your money in our direction. And screwing with your head and moving you along is part of the process of witchcraft. Witchcraft convinces you that you are part of a small elite group of people, that the real world out here is really not real, that you have control of things through arcane words and rituals and things of that nature. And back to Disney. So Disney has abounds with witches and wizards, and you know, we see them all the way from Snow White to the modern ones. There's, you know, all kinds of bizarre goddesses, demon temples, and what have you going through all of this. A lot of pagan imagery going through it. And one of the things I found fascinating is that a lot of the mythology, including Peter Pan, particularly Peter Pan. Peter Pan is actually a representation of the devil, based on the god Pan. And if you read the original notes for Peter Pan that were made by both the writer and by the writing staff for the movie, the cartoon, you will come to find out that Peter Pan was supposed to be the bad guy. He uses magic. He steals these children from their home, moves them through time, convinces them to forget their families, and then uses magic and threatens to kill them. The lost boys are children. If you remember the plot of the play, as soon as they start to grow up, they're gone. In the book and in the original script, Peter Pan kills them. And the pirate that is the nemesis in the movie actually was one of the lost boys, and how he lost his hand was because Peter Pan attempted to murder him when he started to grow up, and he got away. I had no clue of the dark imagery. So what I'm going around about to say to you is that magic is still gonna follow its same course. We're just glorifying it. We're making it positive. There's a line in Aladdin, it's called A Whole New World, and the line says, I can open your eyes, take you wonder by wonder, over, sideways, and under, on a magic carpet ride, a whole new world, a fantastic point of view. This is where it gets interesting. No one to tell us no, or where to go, or say that we are only dreaming. The first line of the Satanic Bible is, do what thou wilt is the whole of the law, that no one should tell you anything about what to do. And so it reinforces that as a young person, as a child, or as an independent entity, you don't have to listen to rules, laws. You can just wander off and do whatever you want to do. There's no responsibility in the entire world. And that's a message put, you know, on over and over again. One of the most popular movies of all time is Frozen. And the theme song is Let It Go. And the message is that you shouldn't be afraid to be yourself and what have you. However, she also almost killed her sister. And then with the help of her parents, she helps to erase her sister's memories. And it's all good because magic is used. So magic is wonderful. It'll fix your mistakes. It'll take care of everything. It'll do whatever you need to be done. The Grove was Bohemian Grove. Couldn't think of it to save my life, and suddenly it just popped in front of me. But, you know, that's a place where magic still occurs. In fact, I was just listening to somebody talking about that that's an expert on the subject, and he said that there are now books coming out from Bohemian Grove from the 1920s, 30s, and 40s, where they actually, this is how brassy it got, they were sacrificing people, literally, including children, and now they supposedly do it in effigy. And they have photographs of them standing around doing it. And they aren't afraid of being arrested. You have to understand, this is the power elite. These are presidents and senators and the richest men in the entire world. Most of our presidents, not all, but most of our presidents, Reagan, Nixon, Bush, a lot of them came from, they were there. One of the very few to speak out against it, well, he went once and he decided it was horrible, was Richard Nixon. He would actually describe it later when somebody asked him about it, and they have it on tape of him talking about what a filthy, terrible place it was. And by the way, guess who else was at the Bohemian Grove Club? Walt Disney. In that time frame when the physical was going on. So the point I'm making today is that magic is going to always be at its root. There are people doing magic just as they did it 1,000 years ago. They are. They're sitting there with their altars. They are taking their magical, you know, ingredients. They're saying their incantations. They're stripping their clothes off. They're participating. They're inviting demons to come in. And it's also the Skull and Bones Society, where they lay in a casket for days asking demons to reshape their personality and to come and enter them. That is a modern way that it has happened. Today, there are so many ways to invite this stuff into your home and into your life. And the reason I wanted you to understand that the psychological, the spiritual, and the physical are all interacting in the social world is because it comes in all these different ways. It's not just one way. So in a modern world, it's going to come at you in 1,000 different ways. It's not going to be somebody knocking on your door and saying, hey, you want to go out and have a ritual with me? But it's going to be some singer telling you to do something specific. Or it's going to be a movie that's going to convince you that if you just said this incantation, if you just ran away and you know, did this or that, if you just did whatever, it would all be good for you. You know, we could have gone on literally 10 times over with what is in the Disney stuff. But we also need to realize that it's everywhere. It's in our social world. It's in 1,000 references. It's buried in all these different rituals. So recently, as in about a week ago, there were two very famous actresses, I won't name them, who were caught performing rituals almost completely naked in the side yard of a very famous person's home. And he caught them with the Ring cameras on his house. And so he took the video footage and he took it to the police and he was like, you know, you need to do something. And the police didn't take it seriously. They're like, you know, all right. So they drug a piece of dead deer into your yard and they were, you know, doing rituals with it. We'll tell them to stop trespassing. But these actresses, these two particular actresses, they talk about it in Hollywood all the time. There are always going to be these submerged cults and these submerged groups of people. If you ever watched the movie Eyes Wide Shut by Kubrick, it is believed that what he did before he died, and possibly why he died, was because he created that movie to say there is an elite group of people in this country and around the world. There's elite groups of people who are participating in rituals, and they're doing so exactly as they have for thousands of years. And one of the things we need to recognize is that sex is a very powerful element of ritual magic. It always has been, all the way back to Baal and his wife and Moloch, and it always will be. We don't see it that way today because we don't think about sex the same way, but that doesn't mean the demons don't. That doesn't mean that God doesn't. That doesn't mean that those people who take this dead on serious and are willing to risk their lives, their reputations, and everything to participate don't. And they do so for very base reasons. Most of the time it's because they want power, and you're told if you do these things, you will get power. And a lot of times they do. So as far as that's concerned, there is truth in the fact that if you will participate, God, the devil will offer you power. You get your reward here, so to speak. But we see it every day and we're numb to it. So black magic will be always in our world. It comes in modern guises through our TVs, our telephones, our computer systems. It's in our literature. It's everywhere you look. And then once you start to poke at it, if you want to poke a little harder, you'll start to find people who know what to tell you to do. And then you get invited to a group. And then something happens which either embarrasses you, shames you, or harms you. And now you're afraid to get out. And fear is an intimate element of all control mechanisms for any kind of cult. And so it works that way for this as well. So my answer is, witchcraft in the modern world is going to be very much essentially the same. It's just going to come in a different, prettier wrapper. And it's still very much here. I could show you 100 examples. So with that, I hope I answered the question. And if you have any more questions about the subject or any other subject, please let me know. I will do my best. Like I said, I apologize, but every time I keep coming back to this, I come back to the same spot. It's not changed, and yet it's just covered in a pretty wrapping. So, and this is how, and so I thought I'd pull some examples. And if you don't think the Walt Disney example was a really good one, consider this. Walt Disney owns 1/6 of all media in the world. So you have a company that large putting out messages that witchcraft is fun, that, you know, magic will get you what you want, that, you know, all you have to do is believe. Almost every Walt Disney movie has almost no parents in it. Almost always the mothers are dead. Often there are no parents at all. So it allows the child to explore the idea of being on their own and having to do everything they want to do.
Interesting. It sounds like, I mean, even after Walt Disney's death, the same things have carried on.
Yeah, even more so. I mean, it's gotten a lot more blatant over the last, 40, 50 years. And I could go right up to like today, literally. Right now they have a show out called The Elementals. It's bombing in the box office, but it's literally about elemental spirits and making elementals cute and, cuddly and these wonderful people that you might want to court. So when you meet the concept of an elemental in real life, if it ever happens, and it happens to a lot more people than you think, you're not going to take it the same way. Instead of calling somebody like me to help you with it, you might decide to talk with it, traverse with it. Not knowing what you're doing is, you're opening yourself up for other things.
I think this one's scarier than some of the other stuff you've done, because this is happening right under our noses.
And you know what? That was really part of the reason it was my struggle. I have to tell you, I've known the material for over a month, but I have been aching inside about, do I want to talk about this? Do I want to say this? But the other thing I want to say before it's over, for those of you who are believers in faith, don't dwell on this, but just open your eyes. Just don't dwell on it. Don't like it, make it a thing you're afraid of. Don't bring anxiety to it, because that just brings negative to you. But just open your eyes, use some discernment. Think about, what does this thing say beyond the obvious? And it's not just Disney, it's every movie. For example, divorce rates in this country went up significantly after Hollywood started putting out movies. Nobody in Hollywood movies ever happily married,
Now you're gonna make me ponder that, because I mean, you see things like, not in movies definitely, but definitely TV, Mary Tyler Moore Show, Dick Van Dyke Show. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, even Brady Bunch, here you have two divorced parents coming together, making one big happy family.
Right.
Yeah, that's TV, but I'm trying to think of.
But if you look behind the scenes on them, they were always trying to push an envelope. For example, the Brady Bunch was the first time that a husband and wife ever slept in the same bed. And I'm not saying that that's demonic or anything, but what I'm saying is they're always pushing an envelope somewhere. There's always an agenda behind it. And this was at the height of the feminist movement. And so you'll see a lot of those feminist themes going on in it. So everything has an agenda. We just have to accept that's just life. Politicians have an agenda. We probably have agendas we're not even aware of when we do things. But those agendas can be good, they can be bad. And you have to think about what's beyond everything. I think three steps ahead. I'm a chess player. So I'm always thinking three steps ahead. Like, okay, if that's what it's saying, what's it really mean? And why is it saying that? Why is that in the storyline? And I start questioning things, which, you know, probably ruins the fun part of it for me sometimes. Because I'm like, I know what that is. That's a Baphomet. Yeah, we're not having that in there. You know, and but there's no denying that, like, it's gotten worse. A Baphomet is on the Blue's Clues now, which is a satanic image. And they actually have it on the Blue's Clues now as a character.
Huh.
So they're pushing these envelopes every day, trying to normalize satanic symbols. They're trying to normalize magic. They're trying to normalize all of this so you'll be more willing to do it. They're breaking down morals and ethics. They're breaking us all down, introducing us to things that we maybe didn't need to know or things that we're too young to know in some instances. Again, back to sex is a part. There's a huge component of sex and magic, and there's an entire form of magic called sex magic, which is one of the most powerful forms of magic out there. And if you don't believe that, think about Jack Parsons. Jack Parsons opened up the door and attempted to bring forth the Whore of Babylon. This is a guy who had nothing but a high school diploma who ends up creating the first, you know, rocket laboratory. And he was found in the desert on multiple occasions. There are many documents. In fact, they fired him. The Jet Propulsion Laboratory fired him because they found him in the desert, naked, laying on the ground, passed out with ritual materials all around him. And he, when he was roused out of his stupor, they asked him, "What the hell do you think you're doing?" And he said, "This was a ritual, sex ritual, so that I could bring the Whore of Babylon forward so the world could end." And it wasn't just him. The guy who did Scientology, L. Ron Hubbard, was his partner in it. And so I could go on and on and on. So it's a thread woven through everything we see and do, and we just don't notice it.
All right, so now this is going to beg the question. Mm-hmm. And this may be on the minds of some of our viewers and listeners. How do you discern genuine entertainment material from that with an ulterior motive or a nefarious underlying?
Well, two ways. First, I'm going to say see with your eyes and hear with your ears. Listen to what you're hearing. Watch what you're seeing. If you're seeing witches being portrayed and they're being portrayed as powerful and strong and what have you, start to question, what are the motivations behind that character? Why are they portraying that person? Why did Ariel sell her soul, her voice, to the witch in order to be able to walk on the land? Which, by the way, if you actually read the original version of The Little Mermaid, it is horrifyingly different.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, Grimm's fairy tales, mm-hmm. even though Grimm was the last name, yeah, they're pretty grim when you read them.
Yeah. They were aptly named. They were definitely aptly named. But, you know, so that's one way. But the other way is, did you ever watch something and you just felt something off about it? Like, I don't think I really, no, there's something makes me feel some sort of way. Yeah. If I feel like that was something, I'll immediately start looking to see what I'm looking for. And if I see something or hear something, or it's just making me feel bad, the energy around me suddenly starting to change to something a little negative, then I will pull out of it. I'm like, nah, it's not worth it to me. I've given up speaking gigs because of this. You know, different things have happened, met people that seemed very, very nice, but they just left me with a bad feeling. And the same with entertainment. I've started to watch a movie and about 20 minutes into it, I'm like, nah, this is going down a lane I don't want to go down. I feel bad. I just got a feeling in my pit of my stomach about this one.
Well, what you're talking about is intuition. And so what would you say, though, to our viewers and listeners who may not have that intuition? What should you look at as giveaway clues? Or can't you answer that question?
Well, this is going to sound a little preachy, but things that go against Judeo-Christian belief systems. So if they are mocking them, if they're lying, intrinsically lying, rerouting the stories. For example, Pocahontas. In Pocahontas, she ends up in some sort of a temple with all these spirit animals and what have you. Well, in truth, she actually was a woman who married a gentleman by the name of John Rolfe, went to England and lived and became a Christian. But that isn't the supernatural spiritual ending that would suit a Disney movie. So they rewrote it to be very New Agey. So as I'm going along and I'm seeing little bits and pieces, I'm looking for those details. Like, she didn't sit there and commune with the animals. I wish people would actually take the time to learn a little bit about Native American history. Like everybody else on the planet, they were good and bad and nice and not nice, and just like everybody else. We can't put one group of people on a pedestal and, you know, and say, oh, they were like perfectly communing with nature. Dude, I can show you places where there's literally 1,000 arrowheads still being found. And they were battles that happened before the first white person walked on this ground. We're human, all of us. And so you start looking for those, for details, things that are wrong. And, you know, obviously, if it's something that is really blatant, like with the eyes wide shut, you know, that entire thing is just a creep. Do you want to tell something that scares me? That creeps me out so bad, I have never made it the whole way through the movie.
Yeah, I've got the feeling that this is just too bizarre. And I mean, I didn't know at that time whether, I mean, because if you take a look at Kubrick's body of work, all the way back to 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Yes.
Bizarre imagery. And, you know, I've read the book, you know, the Arthur C. Clarke book.
Right.
Quite a bit of differences. I mean, there's some cinematics in that that weren't in the book. A movie like A Clockwork Orange. Mm-hmm. Completely bizarro, you know, in my mind. Mm-hmm. Even something like AI, the very last movie that Steven Spielberg had to finish after Kubrick was dead, you could certainly see which parts of that movie were Kubrick and which ones were Spielberg. Looking for magic. The little boy's looking for the blue fairy. You know,
So, you know, there's nothing wrong with having a good time or suspending disbelief. I'll say it one last time. But magic isn't real. Unless it's satanic magic. I'm sorry, but all magic comes from one place or another. And I don't remember seeing anywhere in any Judaic text or Judeo-Christian text where there's magic, where if you say this, do that, boom, this happens. That comes from the arcane arts that were taught. And you always go back to the beginning. And that's why I started out with the information on the different types of consciousness, because what is happening is we're being softened up through 10,000 sources so that when evil approaches us, we won't see it. And that's how magic will continue to always be. The same as before. The Jews did not start out in Samaria to wash up the Sumerian, you know, ancient gods, but they did because they got softened up. And we're getting softened up today.
I got no more questions then.
So with that, then I am done. I hope that I'll go back to ghost stories next week. I promise, folks. But I really wanted to try to answer this gentleman's question.
I think you did, but.
Well, I hope he thinks I did. At least he'll know that I gave it my best shot, and that's all I can promise.
All right, with that, well, then I think I'm going to say good night, folks.
Good night, everybody.